Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello and welcome to After Things. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Justin Robert Young.
Oh, hi, friends.
Brian Brushwood.
Ahoy, ahoy, ahoy.
And Bryce. Castillo.
Ooh, that's me.
Hi, everybody.
Is that a vocoder? What do you got there?
Oh, wait, I can turn the echo on. Hi, everybody.
A documentary came out on Hulu, a Hulu-produced documentary, and you didn't know if you're watching it, if you forgot that it was produced by Hulu. All you have to do is look in the right corner, and everything on Hulu says friggin' Hulu on it, which is why I can't watch anything on Hulu anymore. I'm okay. I'll be better. Fine. I watched The Terror, couldn't watch it because it's a historic piece, but there's Hulu. Every scene, there's Hulu. But I watched this so we could talk about the show. Although my protest against, you know, that icon continues.
He'll stand lonely vigil. He's still there, Hulu-hating man. Some exactly. Say, if you listen to the wind, you'll hear him saying, that damn logo.
As I put on my mask and I aim my laser pointer at the icon on the TV. Yeah.
It's like you walk up and you're like, yeah, we're all protesting the Hulu logo, right?
Oh, listen, we'll chase him because he can take it. Our lone protector, our Hulu hater.
Like, you know, today at the therapy meeting for people who are really upset by this Hulu logo, it's just me sitting there.
Bryce, real quick,
shares.
Could you put that logo in the corner of our podcast?
I was going to do that bit. Yes, I was. Oh,
God. It's just, I cannot, like, I remember that was a thing they started doing on, like, network shows. Yeah. You know, it was like the bug, they call it the bug, and it mm-hmm. became a thing. And then I went to watch a show on Hulu, and I'm like, when's that going to go away? Oh, no, I was trying to watch The Terror. I'm like, no, it's still there. Yeah, it's still there. Ah, it's there. Ah, I can't watch this.
But Andrew, in their defense, there's a lot of people channel surfing, right? And, you know, you just might land on a Hulu documentary and you won't know where you are.
Yeah, you might find yourself watching, you know, this original movie and you don't know if it's original or where you got there or where you are.
Yeah, it's one of these things where it's like, I'm watching this. I'm like, I'm going to be the guy on the street corner with the pamphlet, and everybody's going to look at me like, just ignore it. And I'll be like, no, you can't. It's there.
I do wonder whether – is that just like a piracy thing? Like, do they want like to make sure that anybody who watches this at any point knows that it's a Hulu thing?
Oh, well, considering that
– AMC, like there was the AMC – like the Terror was AMC, so it was the AMC. They put – I think the networks – I don't know.
I would say of the independent cable alternatives, Hulu is the one that strives to be the most TV-like. It's the place where if you missed it when it was on broadcast TV, you go to Hulu to see it. So it doesn't surprise me that it would ape the tropes of television in that regard.
Not to mention you have all the broadcasters providing the content who I'm sure want the recognition because they would already put those bugs on their show anyway.
The reason is because like it was an AMC show on Hulu, so the AMC wants to make sure you know this is from AMC.
Have you seen FX? FX is like burning those into their shows. Like a few seasons in Archer, you can at the beginning of the intro graphics, it says FX presents in the opening title sequence of the show. So like they're kind of recognizing that, you know, like if you watch it on Netflix, you wouldn't see the FX logo, but now. If you see those seasons,
yeah, they're realizing that there's a dormant brand space that they can say pee on it and say, "Hey, this is our thing. Yeah. It's us." Yeah. FX. Fox.
Well,
that's true, you, Andrew. That's because you're the only one who will stop FX. Watching.
All right. So, what was this documentary, Andrew?
The documentary in question is the. Either the untitled Amazing Jonathan documentary or the Amazing Jonathan documentary. It's been released as the Amazing Jonathan documentary.
I think it was called the untitled Amazing Jonathan documentary at Sundance where Hulu picked it up. So I think that's where the confusion comes from.
Yeah. So it's about the comedy magician Jonathan Cizalea's Amazing Jonathan, who is a really awesome guy. I think we've all met him. We've all interacted with Jonathan, AJ, and he is very, very, very much beloved by people here, by us, because I think growing up as either people who like comedy or magic or whatever, Jonathan is so friggin' hilarious. And I don't think it's possible for him to have a bad show because his just energy is incredible. And so the documentary is focusing on him, which was a super excited to see that Jonathan was going to get a doc. I've been around him and seen some of the documentary stuff being done about him, you know, and, you know, more of that in there. But so this is what we all watched to talk about. Reactions.
Okay, so for context, I believe I'm the only person who sat through all of the other documentary. If you're not familiar, if you haven't seen the trailer, this is sort of a meta documentary about the fact that halfway through making this documentary, the filmmaker finds out that there's another documentary being made. The other one came out first, and I sat through it. It was a real slog. The whole thing was just a love letter, and they gloss over some of the most interesting parts about, you know, like his famous drug use and insanity. And instead, it's just like, here's another great thing I did. And then I did this other great thing. And then I pulled this great prank or whatever. I didn't care for it. It wasn't for me. So when I saw the preview for this, I was stoked. I was stoked because it looked like there were stakes and that it was subversive and it was going to set out to be the opposite of what the other one was. And I think in large part it delivered. It certainly was the opposite of the other one in that the other one stayed with Jonathan being the focus the entire movie long, whereas this one on Hulu, about halfway through, it's like, or you know what else I could do is turn the camera on me. So let's have it be the me show. And it's fine. You know, it's a weird take to... for at least a portion of the show to set up and hint that the subject is actually the villain. And, you know, it doesn't end up that way. Spoiler alert. But I liked it for what it was. And I could totally understand why somebody would watch it and it would turn out to not be anything they were hoping to see. But if what you want to see is a documentary filmmaker turn the camera on himself and talk about how complicated it is that he's about to smoke meth with a comedy legend, boy, do I have the documentary for you.
But then my charisma is like that to me didn't, then it was like, and that's when it stopped being a documentary and it was a film a guy made to look like it was like Catfish. Catfish came out, I'm like, well, this is fake. And people are like, what? And if you think Catfish is real, it's a very interesting thing. If you go, no, this is all fake, it falls apart. You're like, oh, this isn't really good.
Yeah, it's definitely pro wrestling. And I think that's the biggest difference is
I'm sorry, interrupt you for a second. Everybody knows pro wrestling's fake. Catfish was put out there, people thinking this was real. And like, oh, wow, I can't believe you got this. It's so insightful to see this. And you're like, no, that was faked. And then you go, oh, then it's not that. Oh, yeah, that was a bad performance. That was a bad this. And so I would say it's a very different context.
I perceived very early in this movie that everybody was in on it, and I held on to that the entire movie long. And I think there were moments of genuine interaction or whatever, but it seemed pretty clear to me that there was some discussion between Amazing Jonathan and the filmmaker where it was like, hey, surprise me, subvert this, go nuts, we'll see what we get. And this episode of After Thing brought to you by Crackle. Bryce just put the Crackle bug up in the corner. That's great. I guess I didn't feel any need to feel betrayed or annoyed because I just assumed the entire time that there's moments there are genuine moments, but in general, it seems to me like the Amazing Jonathan explicitly told the filmmaker, hey, try to surprise me. Let's see what you got.
I guess it's not a matter of I guess for me, it's like when it goes over to the filmmaker story, I felt like these scenes are staged. He's talking on the phone in what feels like it's all the things you do after the fact in the documentary coming from like, you know, producing reality TV. What do you do when you need to make these elms? Oh, I'm going to go in my car. We're going to record me having this conversation. We'll reenact this conversation. We'll reenact this. We'll go do this. We'll go do that. And that was like, and it just felt like, yeah, it's a documentary now cliche. You know, I felt like, you know, you remember the documentary like searching for, you know, Larson or whatever. It was like, Yeah, it was that. I'm watching all of those tropes happen now, and they're not. It's not entertaining to me, because if you want to go there, then go there. Go to where you really want to go.
So, I thought that the movie was certainly well executed to the point where, like Andrew, I began to suspect. Okay, well. I began to suspect its construction at the point where it's like all these kind of very in structure, although sometimes tone, comedic sort of moments are sort of strung together, whether they have punchlines or not. I was initially very intrigued by the trailer because it dealt with kind of two elements. One, that is something that is kind of understood and talked about, and I wouldn't talk about publicly unless it was in this movie that we're talking about now, which is Amazing Jonathan's drug use. And the idea that, look, he is, you know, now 4 years past when he got a death diagnosis, and he has been very open about, you know, his health. And if there is an element that I felt betrayed on, it is that the movie hinges by the end of it on the documentarian's relationship with Jonathan vis-a-vis the fact that Jonathan is dying, to the point where, and it's hinted in the trailer, that there's a confrontation between the documentarian and Jonathan about whether or not he is fabricating his illness. That's something where it's like, You have to deliberately build up to that point, and I only hope that this is something that they all were on the same page about, because if they weren't, then it's something that I've kind of become more uncomfortable with the longer I got away from the ending. I thought the ending was very, very touching, and as soon as the movie was over, I was very happy with my experience, but. Wow. Man, it's a complicated thing, and if all of a sudden, you know, we get word from, you know, people that we know that are close to them, and you know, AJ and Anastasia, that like, oh no, like, we wanted to set out to make a transgressive, grab you by the throat yet more impactful than you were thinking kind of documentary, and that's what we did, and we're very happy with the output, then I'll be a lot happier with it. But the way it is now, it's like, man, I get it on some level. If it's like, Amazing Jonathan should have, if you're gonna capture his spirit and his chaos, then maybe the documentary should be weird and jagged and more emotional than it should be, and a little bit too real than it should be. But on the other hand, considering that the movie does do a very effective job by the end portraying a very frail, confused drug addict who almost certainly will die before his mother, like, that's a little more like, all right, so we're telling this story, which is really about the documentarian, at using this guy as a backdrop. And like, if they're not in on it, then that's something that bothers me more the more I've sat with the movie.
I guess a little bit sort of frustrating for me was, is the documentary turn the camera on himself, which now is a thing that you do because you decide you got to be as important as your subject in some cases, which drives me nuts, because sometimes I want to watch a thing about a thing, not hear the story about the person making the thing, because you realize, man, I'm able to attach myself to this thing, whatever. It irritates me a bit. But Benjamin Berman is an interesting guy. He's got, you know, the only thing you know about him is you see this quick little like screen grab in the frame of one little quick cut, where you realize this guy's worked on shows like Comedy Bang Bang, Tim and Eric. He's an accomplished comedy director. He's got his own pedigree and stuff. You know nothing about that for him, which to me, it's like, if you want to turn the camera on yourself, then tell us a little bit about you. Like, why is this the, because it, it became the act, the structures are almost based around like the sense of his feeling of a sense of betrayal. And it's like, okay, we have a big thing. You lost your mom when that was young, and that's a touching moment, and that's a real moment. But he's devoid us of knowing anything about him or the consequences, because there's, you know, I'm going to spoil alert, scene where he decides to use meth because to convince Jonathan to let him use, show Jonathan using meth on screen, which is just felt like Jonathan called it out right in the moment. Are you trying to be Vice? But who are you? Like, I don't know. Like, you know, you seemed very eager to do this. What do we need to know about you as the filmmaker to know why you did this, which you're not telling us because you get control over this, which was frustrating to me.
So. Yeah, I thought they did a bit of that by showing the, you know, his early video footage and interviewing his parents and all that stuff. But I guess that, it didn't land.
That stuff is very affecting to me. Like the like watching his mom slowly wither away, and then like this interview with his dad, like, you know, months after the mom passed away, while he's like zooming in on his friend or brother or cousin mugging, you know, behind his like dad breaking down. Like, that's like there's some crazy footage in there. It's just, I don't know. Go ahead.
But then we jump forward to the guy making. I'm like, who are you? Like we get some shots of your house. You know, and also in any documentary too, there's the things that you don't know, like family members that aren't on camera that you would never know because, you know, like, I don't want to be in this. And so we create this, all documentaries are a narrative, and you watch, and, you know, you watch from reality TV shows, you find out like, oh yeah, no, there's a sister that's not on the show because she doesn't want to. Here, you know, the family members are not. And with the filmmaker, it's like, you've hidden so much of who you are here, and what you have put on there to me felt like, I believe he was surprised by the other documentaries being made and the Matthews thing. Like, I believe there's I think those moments are real, but the way he tried to tell the story was felt faked and forced and added and stuff. And it's like, I don't know. I'm as a documentary about Jonathan, you're going to walk away not really, you'll get an idea of a bit of who he is as a person. He's a sweet, sincere person that can be the most truthful person you can talk to. You get some of that. You get Anastasia, who is darling. I love her. She's, you know, is supportive of this person that has got to be an incredibly difficult person to deal with at times. You get to see them, which I'm glad for that. And I understand it's not a documentary about him. It's about a documentary about trying to make a documentary where he's the subject. And that's where I feel like if that's what it wanted to be, they could have done a better job of that.
I mean, that's like the whole conflict at the end of the movie, though, right? Is like, hey, if the point of my documentary is to get the most footage of you until you die and then put it out after you die, so I have the footage of you posthumously, like that. I mean, that's the central conflict of the
it becomes
yeah, sure,
because you are like slowly resolving all these other things that are, by the way, the things that kind of sell you on watching it.
It felt like the missing Richard Simmons sort of idea thing a little bit of like, hey, you know, we kind of this is actually not a big issue. Let's just like find out. It's not exactly the same situation, but it felt a little bit like that of, you know, the planned narrative kind of coming to an abrupt halt. But in this case, it was whether the documentarian felt he was being exploitative of Jonathan's death or not.
Well, and I think that that's why I didn't mind all of the things that were obviously faked and shot after the fact. Because when you begin this kind of project, you know, this 4-year project, nobody knows how it's going to end. And so you just grab everything and then the story unfolds. You know, in this case, it was multiple documentaries. So it's like at some point you get a strong sense of what the first documentary to come out is going to do. And by virtue of having already covered the bases, it's like, okay, let's assume everybody's seen the first documentary. So what is the story that we want to tell that is truthful? Here's a real truth. Me, the documentarian, was told that I would be the sole person, and it turns out I'm not, and I'm going through this experience of feeling betrayed, and let's see what we could get of that. And
it becomes like a mini true crime almost sort of story where it's not about the subject anymore. It's about, hey, what happened here? is there something actually different here?
Yeah. Well, and they're like, what are the pieces and what story that we could tell that is essentially true given these pieces that we have? Okay, now what are the missing gaps? And one of those missing gaps are there has to be something to introduce me to the audience. So let me find some old clips of my family. Let me get my dad in there. Okay, now we're at the point where, well, there has to be, you know, a win condition at the end. So, you know, let's take this one minor part from before and at least we can make things right with that. And I mean, all of that, maybe your frustration, Andrew, is just that it wasn't a documentary. Like it flat out was not a documentary, and it does say in the title that it's a documentary.
It felt good. You could argue that, like, hey, I'm gonna, the documentary decided, you know what? I'll make it about me making this thing about him and me getting redemption and me doing this and make, he turned the camera on himself, which it's fine. I didn't care. That part didn't feel emotional. It didn't feel well done. I felt like this is when it got boring. This is when I didn't enjoy it, because this is when it sort of was a cliche of every other documentary. It's like you watch documentary now and you watch them do the cliche and the tropes. And it's like, now is when Fred Armisen's character decides he's going to make himself the center of the story. You know, now is when his Fred Armisen has decided to pull his parents into this thing for no reason other than to give background.
You know,
and
what?
Now we're putting our subject way into off screen. And it's like, there's that, you know what I'm talking about? The, which
yeah,
one? The Searching for
Yeah,
Larson?
Absolutely. It was Searching for Gary Larson. The,
That was a template for this. It was amazing.
It really was. And I would say that having seen documentary now almost certainly shapes your experience of this, because they are so good on that show. If you're not familiar in the audience, Documentary Now is a series of parody documentaries, and it's brilliant. Everybody should watch it.
The plot is, you know, Fred Armisen plays, and it's based on sort of this loosely in the Searching for Bill Watterson, the guy who did Calvin Hobbes. And this one, Fred Armisen's character sets out to find Gary Larson, who doesn't want to be found or whatever. And then he increasingly says, you know what, I found the, you know, the real thing is the story is me. It's really about me. And that's playing through my head about this. Like, hey, we have this guy that has an amazing legacy in show business. It's touched so many lives. We're going to talk to these people up front, but we're never going to talk to them again. We're going to tell you he did things, but then we're not going to tell you about his rise or what he did or the real, the nightmare of kind of things, what's going on there. I'm going to tell you about my story, about making this story about this guy. And I'm like, who do I think is more interesting? As far as I know, Benjamin Berman, Amazing Jonathan. So when we went to Berman, I'm like, yeah, making documentaries is hard.
You know, well, especially because what makes the conflicts special enough to include in a documentary predicates, or you need to predicate it with, like, is Jonathan at the base level a total asshole? At the worst, this, like, Svengali, who, like, God knows how many people in his orbit are kind of there through him, like, either emotional abuse or something else, you know, because otherwise it's like, if it's just, oh, we had scheduling conflicts and it turns out he forgot about this other documentary thing because he's on so much medication. Those aren't conflicts that you can make that you can even put into a self-serving kind of documentary like this one is. It has to be, no, he's being personally antagonistic, and this is consistent with how he treats other people in his life. And it's oh wait, hold on, and this is the big moment in the trailer, is like, is he fabricating his illness, and what ramifications does that have on this story? And that is something where it's like, by the time that we got to the end, I'm like, oh good, I feel good about where everybody is at the end of this story. But also, oh God, like, really? We spent the majority of our story looking at this frail, dying legend, a comedy legend, magic legend, beloved amongst his peers, who has a drug problem. We made him the Moriarty to your Sherlock, before realizing that things were confused. Like, that's where I'm like, oh, I mean, 'cause
or I hope that this is something that was all kind of set up, because I'm cool if everyone's playing a version of themselves. If this is about, and if Jonathan is like, hey, look, I got a punk rock documentary that is like raw, real, and captivating. Raw, real, and captivating are, you know, definitions of his art writ large. I think that's cool. If he's, you know, if that was something laid out, and even if he likes it now, I mean, who knows? I don't know. It was a very conflicting thing to watch it, because, you know, look, all the negative stuff that's talked about in that documentary, I've heard it from people that love him dearly, like that no matter what, care about him and want him to be understood and recognized and live for as long as he possibly can past his diagnosis. It did not feel like that was kind of what I got from this. I just kind of got a lot of skeletons being swept into the foreground so we could set up this mystery and then resolve it at the end. And it's like, oh wow, we really swept all those skeletons out there to set up that payoff, huh?
I think everybody who's listening has interest, watch it. Absolutely watch it, because as you see the reactions from here, you know, we are you know, it and that tells you right there it's
powerful art. Like love it or hate it, you're gonna feel something.
And maybe not what the filmmaker intended in my case, but it does a thing. And I wanna, so our comment, Beef Viper said Michael Moore murdered the door document. I'm gonna defend Michael Moore here. Okay, and well, I'm not going to defend
Clip this for posterity.
Yeah, I won't defend his facts and things like that, which are even in Roger and Me, he said things just were not true and inconsistent or things like this and all that. And I'm not going to try to get into the actual substance of what he says or whatever, because I won't defend that. But making himself the subject of it, I don't have a problem with that, because in actuality, like when he did Roger and Me, what he did was, part of it was, let's give a face to somebody from Flint, Michigan, but more, documentaries treat their subject, you're supposed to think these things are objective presentations of what's going on, that like, this is the thing that happened. And if there's nobody on screen to be the voice or the face of the documentary, we tend to believe these things. If it feels like news and stuff, we think these things are real. The more you learn about how these things are made, or the more you know about a topic, you realize, oh no, like they chose this clip, the soundbite out of like 3 hours of interview, and the person answered a different question, but it makes them look bad. You know they have agendas. You know the documentary, everybody who makes a documentary has an agenda, and it's not, I want to give a fair, you know, fair view of this. It's like, no, they have a point of view they want to get across. Michael Moore, defending him, he put his face out there so you understood the point of view. You what? Understood who was saying this, who was making this argument. And I have no problem with that style of a documentarian, like, hey, I wanted to find out more, whatever, blah, 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 blah. And this is going to be shaped from my point of view of how I see things. And I think that's,
it's also honest. A lot less complicated of a storytelling device. If there's if you're doing a traditional narrative documentary, it's hard to say the story is blank, but then we found out blank, and now we think blank. Like, that's hard to do unless there's a human being that we can go on that journey with. And so I think a lot of Michael Moore's stories, I'm fine with that trope or whatever.
And also, especially with Roger and Me, it's kind of faded in his work since then, but Roger and Me, I think, was in part a hit because he sort of played a character. He was this, like, kind of useful idiot character of, like, I'm from Flint. Like, next thing you know, all the factories closed. So I'm going to go ask the CEO why the factories closed. And it's like, I'm sure that there's an element of Michael Moore that does that, but it's not like him doing these kinds of like gonzo elements are theatrical. Like he's doing a bit. He's using the kind of like iTeam TV sort of idea to tell a story from his perspective. I don't know. I still like Roger. Roger's
good. All right. We've now moved beyond this. Anyway, I think our review is see it and feel whatever you feel for the amazing Jonathan documentary.
I will just also say the Lounge Lizards half hour of Amazing Jonathan. If you want to, like, that is seared into my brain. It was one of those things that it was just on Comedy Central, like in my mind every day at the same time. I think I must have watched it 50,000 times. And it is kind of the core of the like act that made him famous.
It is the seminal performance that for you at least will always be like the one.
Amazing Jonathan to me will always be that Lounge Lizards half hour on Comedy Central. So if you can find it, go check that out, because you know, he does deserve to be understood as revolutionary a comedy and magic act as he really was.
Yeah, you have to separate, like, well, what I would like to have seen versus, you know, what the documentary show goes to follow is, like, his story is a very interesting one. And, like, you know, Merv Griffin loved him, right? So Merv Griffin produced a game show with Jonathan hosting this. And that was this attempt to take this manic energy, this likability, and take it and put it into some other medium. And I'm fascinated by that, because it's like you meet people in magic, you go, man, if we put this person in this other thing, they would be amazing. You know, if so-and-so wasn't doing magic, they were just a host, they would be fantastic. And that's one of these things. It's like, I'm like, you know, one of the many facets of him. I'm like, man, I wish we knew more about
that. That's all in the other documentary. Definitely check that out. In fact, everybody check them both out. Hey,
Always Amazing is what the other one is called. Always. It's still on YouTube.
Right on, man. I hate to chase this off, but I got to go get prepped because we're down one Tom Merritt on Chord Killers.
Well, you're up one and you're main. That's me. I'm Andrew Main, so I'll be on there. Any quick picks? I guess our pick will be this documentary.
Yeah. Go see it. Now, the one thing I think we can end on this coda is... I do wonder whether or not it's going to be an award thing, because it's certainly gotten a lot of press, and traditionally documentaries that get a lot of press wind up, you know, like there's noms. Not
getting them nom nom noms.
So, it's been after.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.